A large dose of the Federal Reserve chief is now available for public consumption.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Janet Yellen, who is arguably the most powerful single economic policymaker in the world, starts 2 days of briefings on Capitol Hill. But will there be much more to say after a big profile of the Federal Reserve chair began working its way to readers of the latest New Yorker magazine? Philip Swagel was the Treasury Department's senior economist during the last financial crisis and now teaches at the University of Maryland. He just read the Yellen piece. Professor, good morning.
Hi, David. Good morning.
So in this New Yorker piece, Dr. Yellen comes off as very focused on using Federal Reserve policy to heal a jobs market that she regards as still quite broken. What do you make of this?
She has been very clear that she sees the jobless and especially the long-term unemployed as the top problem facing the U.S. economy. I mean, of course, she's the Fed chair. She has to worry about inflation, but she doesn't see inflationary pressures as very strong right now, and she sees the unemployed as an urgent problem, and she's going to do something about it.
Now, my Wall Street friends are rapidly thumbing through the New Yorker piece as we speak, and many of them are coming away with the idea that Janet Yellen is now officially not a hawk, but a dove when it comes to being vigilant about inflation. Is that an appropriate conclusion?
It is, in the sense that she is trying to balance between the Fed's dual mandate, right? Price stability on the one hand, but then the labor market on the other hand. And right now, she's looking at the data, and she says, I don't see inflation. Sure, right now that makes her a dove. The question is, as inflation eventually comes back, and there are some signs of it, how aggressively will she raise interest rates?
Now, I remember Dr. Yellen's predecessor subjected himself to a 60 Minutes TV interview. Dr. Yellen did three interview sessions, apparently, with the writer of this New Yorker piece. Lots of information sitting there to be mulled over and chewed on by anyone who wants a job in this labor market or investors. Do you think it's a good idea to open herself up in this way?
Well, it sure takes Fed transparency to a new level. I will say that. She cares about the unemployed. She comes at it from her personal background, and I think that's a good thing for the American people to know.
Philip Swagel at the University of Maryland, thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now to the Farnborough Air Show in Britain, where they're trying to hawk airplanes like their aluminum siding. BBC business reporter Russell Padmore is following this. Morning, Russell.
Morning to David.
It's an air show, but it's really a trade show. They're trying to sell some airplanes there.
This really is, I suppose, about the stage for the global battle for aircraft sales between Airbus of Europe and Boeing of the US. Now, today we've had Airbus's sales chief, John Leahy, saying he expects at least 50 orders for the A330neo. And the revamped wide-body jet that Airbus is pushing really does deepen this contest with Boeing for up to $250 billion of orders. Well, Randy Tinseth is the vice president at Boeing, and he says their view of future sales is not the same as Airbus.
Frankly, the 787 did push that A350 out of the market, the 800, because it carries more passengers, it's more efficient, it flies further, faster, higher, and has a better passenger experience.
I love how you can hear the engines revving up in the background there. Now, the delegation from Russia to this air show, their presence seems rather muted this time around.
Yes, you just have to look at events in Ukraine to see there was a diplomatic problem for the British government. They answered that by effectively not issuing any visas to Russian government officials for this biennial air show. A bit of a snub. And we've had effectively government officials saying to their commercial aircraft counterparts at the show at Farnborough, look, maybe you should pack up and go home.
BBC business reporter Russell Padmore, thank you very much.
Thanks. Good being with you again.
We've been reporting how Home Depot in the last day put 3D printers into 12 of its stores. Reporter Tracy Samuelson went to see one in action.
Mike McGrath watches a MakerBot build up layers and layers of melted plastic to create a small bolt.
I've never actually seen one working.
McGrath works in construction and says maybe if the machine was cheaper, right now it starts around $1,400, he could imagine printing parts for his tools when they break.
Little clips for table saws, like everything's made out of plastic for all these machines.
You need a digital design for anything you want to make, and the MakerBot can't print in metal. So McGrath couldn't have made any of the items he's buying. Mostly, the printer is still a novelty, a way to get people in the door, says Jocelyn Phillips, a research analyst with IBIS World.
Home Depot and Lowe's and all the other companies in the industry have traditionally gotten you to come to the store for the hammer, but while you're in the store, they've got a demo on how to make a bulletin board, how to do your garden.
Phillips says Home Depot is facing increased competition from hardware and online stores. So it's trying a buzzy new technology to print itself apart from its competitors. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Last week, we covered the moves leading up to news this morning that the number two and number three cigarette companies are merging. Reynolds American will buy Lorillard for $25 billion. Lorillard is big into menthols. Altria is still the biggest U.S. tobacco firm. Antitrust regulators will scrutinize the deal. Now, legal experts tell us that keeping the price low will be the focus, even if higher cigarette prices would cut consumption, which in this case could improve public health. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people. Of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.